Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton and our producer, Katie Galley. We got a great show today. This is a topic that is close to my heart and important to the city. Stone, how are you doing?
I am doing well, and I know it is. This is going to be an exciting and informative conversation. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast partner with Fulcrum Equity Partners, Mr. Jim Douglas. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, Jim, can you tell us a little bit about Fulcrum? How are you serving folks?
Yeah, so Fulcrum, we're investing out of our third fund. We have a $200 million fund, and about half of what we invest in are lower middle market healthcare businesses, and half are growth stage technology businesses, SaaS software, transaction processing, things of that nature.
Now, has Fulcrum been around a long time?
Yeah, we were founded in 2006. My partners, Jeff Muir, Chom Greer, and Frank Dalton started the fund in 06. It's about a $40 million fund that was successful, raised a second fund in 2011. And then we just completed raising our third fund last year.
Can you talk a little bit about how the kind of the ecosystem for private equity and VCs and angel investing in Atlanta or in the Southeast has kind of evolved over the years?
Yeah, so angel investing, we're not angel investing. So we're not really in the angel investing world. We're really investing in businesses that, on the healthcare side, have kind of 2 to 5 million EBITDA, maybe a little bit bigger, maybe $15-30 million business on a revenue side. On the technology side, they're typically $3 million to $8 million recurring revenue. Now, we rely on people that fund those companies to that point, and then there's a very, very healthy ecosystem in the Southeast for doing that. A healthy system of not only entrepreneurs that invest in them, but also $25-50 million funds that do that. So,
okay. So why don't you educate our listeners about kind of the different players in this? So the angels are at the beginning, right? Those are the people investing at the very beginning of a company's idea, even at the idea stage.
Yep.
And then they're their own kind of, they have their own ecosystem, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the way the world kind of works, people love investing in early stage companies.
You know, do people, they? People that, is that true?
You'd be surprised.
You know it's true.
You'd be surprised the network of people in Atlanta and in the Southeast that have money, have created some wealth for themselves, that just enjoy the excitement of being involved with a young entrepreneur and helping get that business going. So, and then beyond that, there's funds that are anywhere from $10 to $50 million that can put $500,000 to up to $1.5-2 million in any individual company to kind of get them along. So that first evolution of a company really starts with wealthy individuals that understand the business they're investing in, hopefully, or smaller funds. And we've got a really healthy ecosystem. I'd say in the Southeast and up and down the East Coast right now, it's at probably an all-time high, just the people that you can, that are there to help good businesses get funded. And I generally have a belief that all good businesses do get funded. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody that says there's not capital for these early stage businesses, I was like, well, that's probably because this business doesn't deserve to be funded, especially in this cycle of the market where there's a lot of capital.
Now, so you come in after the company's kind of proven itself and is looking to go to the next level?
Yeah. So we actually, because we're all former operators ourselves, the origin of our fund, Tom Gregg, Frank Dalton, and Jeff Muir, they all have operating experience.
So they were in kind of one of these ventures that made it and then they exited.
Yes.
So now they have some money and then they're kind of all joined forces.
Tom Greer, not Tom Gregg. I have another friend named Tom Gregg that I always...
All of them. All the Toms.
It's important to know your partner's name. So they've operated healthcare businesses or technology businesses or both. And myself, I had a long technology background. So we want to help these younger companies even before they're at our stage. So we're typically seeing them when they're maybe $500,000 in revenue on the technology side, $1 million in revenue. I actually just met with one this morning before I came here. Not ready for us now, but he's in a good business, in a good space, and we can help him, introduce him to that ecosystem of the people I just talked about,
right?
The funds, the individuals that kind of help get it along. And that way we've kind of done our part. And, you know, it's a hobby for us. We love doing this. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a great business, but if we weren't investors, we'd be operating something. Mm-hmm. So we enjoy helping build.
So this reminds me a little bit of athletics. Now, I was never the subject of any of this as an athlete. But I did get to play a little bit. But our coaches in Escambia County, they would know the professional scouts. And if they saw a kid with some talent, they might reach out to a scout. And the scout comes down and says, you know, you guys.
Exactly the same.
It's the same thing, right? The angel like guys this, let you know.
Like this kid this morning that I met with, I was like, okay, this kid, he's passionate. He's intelligent. He's been around inside a business before. The vertical he's picked out is big enough to care about. He's thoughtful about how he is. Like that. I like, okay, somebody in a 45 minute breakfast, I go, like, somebody will back that guy. I said,
yeah,
send me the list of people you're talking to. I'll fill in the blanks and we'll see if we can help you get it that next round funded. Now, we couldn't touch the business in the stage it's in now, but it's in a big enough market that 2 years from now, it could be right in our wheelhouse. So we do that all the time. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a fun part
that's
of the job.
Great.
So now, the companies that you do invest in, is it something where you're just giving them money? How much involvement, hands-on, are you at this?
So I say we don't want to run them, or we would be running one. We wouldn't be investors. But we love to be involved. So we're not just showing up to board meetings. We're actively involved. I just came back from a board meeting on a business we invested in December in Florida. And I was standing back. And since we've invested, we've helped them bring in the head of marketing. We help them bring in an operating officer role. We help them bring in the head of sales. And then through another board member and us, we got a part-time, really experienced CFO in the space. I was like, wow, that's a case study. how quickly you, in your network, you can get the right people to really help the entrepreneurs take to the next level. And then beyond that, so people are a big, we put our capital in. We don't want to change out. We want to back a team. But a team, they're taking our capital to build the team to the next level, right? So helping build that team quickly is really, really important. And then beyond that, you know, strategy and financials and all the above. But we're pretty actively involved in them.
And what are some of the misconceptions that an operator might have when they're working with a private equity firm like yours?
I think one of the thing that people, and I always looking in the mirror, I could have done better at it when I was running companies. It's like you invest in companies that are ramping, and all the people that got you to where you are probably all aren't going to ramp at that same rate, right? So you have to be really thoughtful about continuing to move your team at the rate your market avails you to move your business.
And when you say move your team, that might be invest in people that have more skills or
somebody
talent.
That's been really loyal to you might just be in the wrong seat. You got to move them around. And so the perception, the perception that they want to come in and change everything, we want to help it evolve for you. Right. I always tell somebody, it's like, we're in the business. We're putting our money in, A, to get our return, but to make your common value worth a whole lot of money. Because if your common value is not worth anything, then our investment was bad.
Right.
So if I have to come to you and tell you that that person is in the way of your common value, let's agree. Those conversations we're not going to get upset about. We're just going to have them.
Right. And we can still be friends.
But let's agree that we want people to ramp at the same rate we expect our business to ramp, because they always hit a wall if you don't.
And then if you're not comfortable with that, then maybe that's not the right fit then.
It's a lot about when we're investing in companies, it's a lot about understanding. I could love the business and love the market and love the financials of it. And just look at the operating. We don't think alike about how we make decisions, and you kind of feel that out. And you need to be with people that you want to be building it together. I'm going to say we don't want to run it, but we want to be able to help.
And then from the operator standpoint, do you have any advice for that operator who has a business that might have potential and then is trying to be attractive to the suitor like yours?
Well, it's always, you know, it's simple. It's being simple about your business model. Be able to articulate your story in a simple fashion that people are going to understand. Make sure you're working in a market that's big enough to care about.
And then when you say that, what is that? How do you define that?
Well, everybody has their different definitions, but you know, most of our businesses, we want to be in markets that are 300 to 500 million at least, and hopefully bigger. You know, everybody wants to say, I want to be in a business. I want to be building a business in a that's in a billion-dollar market. Well, there's everybody would love that. That's a layup, right? I think 300 to 500 million is probably where you see the most guys like us say, okay, that's interesting enough. And then the ability to expand that market in other ways, that's probably the low end.
And then when you're comparing yourself to other firms in the Southeast, how do you differentiate yourselves?
I think the operating experience is one of them.
Because some people are just like wealthy older people and they're just funding things.
Well, the institutional funds, you know, like ourselves, you tend to have a lot of people in them that are that came out of banking and M&A and things of that nature. And there's a mix of operators, but it's also a heavy mix of people who came out of the kind of the transactional side of the world and then got into a PE fund. They might have worked for an investment bank and then decide, oh, let's go, PE fund's a better way to make money. I'm going to go do that. So the fact that all four of us have operating experience, and that's not to say we're the cat's meow, that we everything we've touched worked. I'd tell you this, the things we touched that didn't work are more valuable than the things that did.
That's right.
And it's had a, it's that experience that's helpful. But there are other funds that have that operating experience too, but I'd say that's a differentiator.
And are there other funds, even here locally, that have a lot more members that to have like more than four or five partners or how?
No, that's actually for the, in the Southeast, you know, your typical fund, our average, our check size will cut as little as 4 or 5 million initially. We can be in this fund invested up to 15, 20 million in any individual company. So that's a, you know, a $200 million fund's a good size.
Right.
For the South. It's a good size for the Southeast and a good size for us to do what we want to do. Four partners is about the right that's amount right. for that. So you see a healthy amount of four partner type funds that are in that, I'll call them 100 to $250 million range of size of fund. That's a pretty good. And then when you get in the bigger funds, you see multiples of partners bigger than that. Because obviously the private equity world is enormous. There's billions, several billion dollar funds. And honestly, that's, I should have said this earlier, we help our entrepreneurs grow the companies from the stage we didn't get them to a stage where those bigger funds want to buy or want to recap them.
And that's your business model, right?
That's our business
that's
model.
By definition.
And we sell to strategics too, which is always, you know, it's good to have options. But PE buyers are built to buy companies. So the PE buyer is a good buyer for us and makes our space kind of a good space. So we'll invest in a company that's 3 to 5 million in revenue. We get it up to 20 million in revenue, then or even headed towards there pretty quickly. The larger PE funds have huge marketing groups. They'll come find that company and they'll be knocking on our door to say, we'd like to recap that company where management gets to take, you know, 2/3, half or more of their stake off the table and roll their other piece, right. Make more on the last piece than they did on the first one. That's the successful game. That's the one that you really love to play for the entrepreneur. It works for us, works for the entrepreneurs, works for the big funds.
Right.
That's the big PE ecosystem that's been created.
And that's where everybody's high-fiving around the table at the end of the day.
Yeah. And all then right. The smaller funds would say, you know, we get them along to 3 million and then we get the
and
Fulcrums
then we
in the world.
Them, right. And hand it off to you. And they're high-fiving.
So it's just working your way up the food chain.
Right.
All right. So entrepreneurs like Lee and I, we have this little business radio network. We have a handful of studios. If we're trying to get in position, and I don't even know what the timeline is, 2 years, 3 years, 1 year, to be attractive and want to have appropriate conversations with the fulcrum level, are there things that we should definitely do or definitely not do to get ready for those conversations or to even get on your radar? Or how does that?
Well, I think it's always, first of all, understand, just like we understand who our buyers are going to be, right? We don't invest in a business that we don't think larger PE funds would be interested
right.
in. Or we don't
you know how the story's going to end ahead of time.
When we're making an investment, we're envisioning what the exit was going to look like. Right. We don't invest in. And I'd say the same thing. I don't know your business that well, but I would say the same thing. It's like, okay, what is attractive? What is my business that a fund would be interested in? Is it a platform to go open up these kind of stations across the nation? Okay, that could be it. That's interesting. Is that what it is? You have to figure out what that story.
And I may find as I'm learning more about that Fulcrum is a perfect match for that, or okay, Fulcrum's not really the right match for that, but Is that right? Because different funds, right?
Yeah, different funds
might not be your thing, right?
We would be a horrible match for that because I know nothing about your space, right?
Right. Whereas, but if we were healthcare,
if we were healthcare staff, you'd probably at least want to have a conversation.
That's the biggest thing about investing. We invest in spaces. I should say the origin of our fund. This is over 100 C-level operators who have been successful and understand various businesses. So they were our original investors. Mm-hmm. They were all of Fund One, most of Fund Two, and half of Fund Three. So that DNA, along with our operating DNA, we can look at a lot of different businesses. So if you came and knocked on my door and I was like, well, I don't know anything about it, but I really like that business, I'd find somebody in our network that knew about it,
right,
drag them in the room and say, hey, meet with these guys and help me understand. But as far as being ready, it's more understanding what is the return, you know, what can be done with your business, right? When you say, I'm ready.
We just got to get Lee out of the way and it's going to take off, man.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
And then beyond that, it's professionalizing the business and things of that nature, but have a replicable model to expand your business. And you're trying to show that, hey, this is investable because here's what I have today and here's what we could do with it.
All right. I asked the wrong question earlier because I used the term partner. I think what I meant to ask is investor. So you have four partners, but you have more people than that who invest in your fund.
Yes, the partners.
Okay,
just,
I misunderstood the structure.
Yeah, this fund now is a $204 million fund. It's half institutions, think endowments, college endowments, insurance companies, things like that, people like that. And then it's half high net worth individuals.
Gotcha.
And we actively recruit those high net worth individuals, the people that, you know, had exits that would need to invest their money and also would see deal flow and help us look at businesses.
And, okay, and those investors, it's okay for them to be passive in that they just want to give money and get a return? Or do you kind of, as part of the DNA of your organization, is you kind of require of them that they have to be available to answer questions?
We don't require. You know, we just like, you know, this is part of being the network.
Right.
We can provide you a good return on your capital, but we really would love to have your DNA and be able to call on you. We're not going to line you up, make you work 40 hours a week. But
right.
But we do, when we invest in a deal, we usually put on the board somebody independent with operating experience.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll pull from our network and go, that guy knows a lot about, you know, healthcare. That guy knows a lot about SaaS software, and get somebody that can. There's nothing better operating a company, and I can say this because I had it, having a mentor that's not your investor.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that person that you talk to is like, you know, and in every one of our companies, we try to do that. Give the entrepreneur that individual that understands their space.
And then when companies are going through the process and working their way up the ladder to you guys, do you have a moment or a story that you can share that is something where you were like, wow, that we really made a difference and it really had an impact? Do you have kind of a proud moment of all the companies you've been working with?
Yeah, well, they're all different ones. You know, we've had them on the healthcare side, we've had them on the technology side. You know, there's one that we partially exited last year. We sold the majority of our interest in it. It was a security software business out of New Jersey. We kind of invest up and down the East Coast, by the way, and into Texas. It was the big thing in security now. 75% of the hacks actually occur in your vendor network, and then they jump into your enterprise.
Oh, really?
Remember, Target was the HVAC guy, right?
Right, right.
That story has been repeated and repeated.
So that's the weak link.
That's the weak link. So we invested in a business out of New Jersey, and it was early. It had a services business attached to it, but it had this software application that helped an enterprise assess the security posture of all their vendors. So I know my own house is safe, but and vendor security is become a huge space. That company had $500,000 in revenue in that business. We would have never touched it, but it had $10 million in this VAR. So we could invest in it because we knew we could sell the VAR for our bait, basically, right, what we put in it. So that company now adds a couple million in revenue a quarter. It's got a $10 million run rate, and it's owned by Insight Venture Partners. We sold it to them earlier than we'd ever planned. But back to what I said earlier, it was such a big space. They were a high growth asset in that space. And the big venture firms, you know, like Insight or JMI, or you name the big ones we would sell to, they have marketing departments that are calling into us all the time, checking on our portfolio companies and then calling into the company. So they found us. We didn't even have to market it.
Mm-hmm.
We obviously checked a few others before we did it. But and there's another successful one here in Atlanta, QA Symphony, which is another Great story. You guys probably had him on the radio.
Yeah, here. Yeah,
multiple times.
So we're investors in that. Very similar story. It's just a high growth. That's one of the best operating teams in Atlanta in a software business, by the way, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And they keep putting up great numbers. So those were two last year. Another one we sold was Logfire, which we sold was warehouse management software for logistics. So it's a SaaS version of Manhattan Associates here in Atlanta. We sold that to Oracle. So we do sell to, every now and then we sell to strategics. PE buyers are easier to sell to, but we sold to strategic in that case. So those are a few, but they're all.
And now for the, like your assessment of the Atlanta startup community, how would you describe it?
It's fantastic. I mean, I think it's
how do you kind of talk about it to people when you're going around the country? Like, how do outsiders perceive Atlanta?
Well, we have what you need. You know, we have capital. We have significant universities that are crank out great talent every day. So you can scale a business here. We're diverse in the types of businesses. Lots of B2B software, strong in logistics. We're strong in, I have a fintech background. We're strong in payments. We're strong in B2B software. We're strong. Actually, have a good, great nucleus with what David Cummings has built with marketing tech now. Mm-hmm. So we're very diverse as far as, and I'm sure I'm leaving off industries left and right in this conversation.
Well, you didn't mention the thing that gets a lot of attention is the film and creative side like that.
Not even to mention music. That. Yeah, that's right. A whole new one, right? So Atlanta is extremely broad, and being talent's tough in every market right now, just because we're at the kind of knocking on the door at the top of the bubble here. But it's a good market, and there's plenty of capital
now. But what's it like from when you're talking to somebody in California or Texas or Boston or New York? How do they perceive Atlanta? Do they see it the way you see it?
I think more and more it's getting, the Southeast is getting a lot more attention just by the people that reach in here and try to invest here. It's for the earlier stage companies, I would say pre us or even the ones we invest in, you want to have your investor that can get to you. You want them to be involved in your business. I think it's really difficult. It would be really difficult for me if I were on the West Coast and investing in an East Coast company. Just not the way I would operate because I can't be close to it. I can't be involved in it as I'd want to be. That's why we kind of stop at Texas. We don't go a whole lot further. We do have one deal in Phoenix, but we were the second investor in that. We got another partner in that one. You need to be able at this stage, this earlier growth stage, if you want to have fewer train wrecks, you got to be able to be involved in them.
And be involved means sometimes showing up, knocking on the door. Coming inside.
Well, it's always planned, but just be, you're there, you're helping. You're not just, you're just showing up for board. This would be a horrible business if you're just showing up for board meetings.
But there's a lot of people who do that.
I don't know how everybody does it. Right.
Maybe not you guys, yeah. but
has to be incredibly rewarding work. It sounds like it's lucrative and you can make a comfortable living and that's fantastic and that's as it should be. But it sounds to me like, and in just watching you and hearing you speak, this is just a lot of fun and it feels good and it's rewarding. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It has, I mean, just like everything else, like they're, all days aren't rosy, but
right.
I'm fortunate enough to have been in public companies, the CFO of a public company. I've run growth stage companies like our size and I enjoyed it every bit of that. Started off as a bean counter at KPMG, which was a great experience there 7 years. So all those things were fun to me. It's what's rewarding now is bringing all that experience together and being able to work with people and not saying, not the cat's meow, we don't know everything, but you're a product of your good and bad things that have happened to you and the network that you've created that can help you and being able to bring all that to bear for an idea you really believe in or an entrepreneur you believe in, there's nothing more fun. It's a blast.
And it's good for the ADD folks because you have a lot of deals happening, right?
You joke about that. My friends will tell you, I have this phrase called business ADD, and I think I have it. So the fact that I can work on multiple different things
right. You never get kind bored.
Of solves that business ADD issue right. of, I like to have multiple things going on.
So now, what can we do to help you? What do you need more of? Do you need more investors? Do you need more companies to invest in?
Always more. We see 1,200 deals a year that kind of we find or find us. So that's good. We typically do 3 to 5 deals a year, but always just having our name out there to make sure we're at the top of mind of a of a few million dollar company that's gonna in a big market that's gonna grow, and or a healthcare business that, you know, that's on the SaaS side or on the technology side, or a healthcare business that wants a firm that has operational experience that loves helping build companies.
So now, when you're looking for those type of companies to invest in, are they typically, there's several of you out there that they're choosing from? Like, how does that process work?
Yeah, it's you know, there's plenty of capital now. So there's usually, I would say the typical deal that the companies, they probably have two or three options at the end of the day. That, you know, in the beginning, they're talking to a bunch, and you know, having been through it raising money and been through it on our side now, it always ends up coming down to two or three term sheets. It typically does for the best companies. Sometimes you'll get somebody where you've been really helpful to them, and they'll just go, okay, if we can come up with a fair price, I don't really want to go raise money, which is the people I respect the most, by the way, because they realize this isn't about going out and raising money. It's about building a company.
Right. Because raising money, that's a whole other job, right? That's
no, it's a huge, it's a total
I
distraction.
Can't imagine, right.
Yeah. No, I'd say that having done it, I mean, it's a total distraction. You have to do that in your day job.
So then if you do have a relationship with a firm like yours that you trust going in, and then you can just agree on what the financial terms are, that makes everybody's life easier.
Yeah. And the market's pretty efficient. So the financial terms aren't that widespread. They are if you say, oh, I'm going to go to the West Coast and raise money. And if somebody's selling the side, like, we shouldn't even be talking to them because we don't think alike.
Right.
But they will get a higher valuation if they go to the West Coast, mm-hmm. clearly, than they will as an East Coast.
So now what about the investors? You said you're always looking for high net worth and other firms to partner with to invest in your firms.
Yeah. So we typically raise a new fund every 5 years. It takes about that time to invest a fund. And along the way, we're meeting more entrepreneurs that have had exits and
that's, you want the operator. That's your...
Yeah, the operator who wants and needs to invest some money and wants to be involved in the fund. You know, right. It's almost, we need the money is, you know, finding the money is not as hard as finding the
right
really good DNA that really could be helpful and wants to be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And the value we bring to our portfolio companies is that, you know, that help and that advice and how to not make those mistakes.
Now, have you been able to get some of the people that you invested in and helped exit then become
part of? Yeah, the guys I've just mentioned in New Jersey that had their exit. Their two founders, Jonathan Norm, both invested in our last fund. There's a whole bunch of examples of that.
And that's organic growth. You like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, and then they see deals, you know, they're in the Northeast, they see deals, or we've had our healthcare guys do the same thing, exits and reinvest in our funds. It's just continuing to create that network. And
mm-hmm. So you're staying active in the, you have to stay active in the community in order to identify, okay, who are the up and comers and have these coffees and meetings that you're having?
Yeah. So we've actually become a little more prescriptive about that. When we were smaller, it was, you know, the partners and our associates that kind of did that. We recently brought on somebody to kind of run biz dev for us what we really need to do is maintain a network of the larger funds that are calling into these companies that see the good ones. That's not big enough for us yet. You guys should talk to the Fulcrum guys.
Right.
Or the ones smaller than us that have backed those companies to know the ones in their portfolios that are reaching our stage. And then the service providers around the ecosystem, from accountants to lawyers to M&A firms, bankers. That's maintaining that ecosystem. What I mean, be prescriptive, quarterly calls with each of them.
Right.
What's going on? What are you seeing?
Checking in.
And it's good for them. It's good for us. So that didn't happen as prescriptively as we would like when we were younger, because we weren't big enough to fund that. So now we brought on a resource to kind of coordinate that.
And then that's their job, is to kind of, with the process, go out and methodically kind of touch bases with the people that you serve and that serve you.
Yep. And that ought to help us continue to just see the highest quality opportunities
in the most efficient way.
You'll see plenty of opportunities. You got to just make sure you see the
right ones.
The right ones.
All right. Well, if somebody wants to get a hold of you and learn more about Fulcrum, how can they find you guys?
Well, you can send me an email at jd@fulcrumep.com or office number 770-551-6339.
And fulcrumep.com is a website.
Yep.
You can see some of the deals.
Yeah, you can go on our website, Fulcrum. We actually just redid that recently. So it's good. It portrays very well what we're trying to accomplish. So
does it have some information for the up and coming company that might be a future fit for you guys? Or does it have some of that, like white papers or
kind it actually of education? Does. No, it does. It talks about exactly our focus, which are, like I said, tech companies that are kind of 3 to 3 million plus in revenue, check size, 5 to 15 million is our typical check size. Healthcare, we typically on the healthcare side are investing in businesses that are 10 to 30 million, making 2 million to 5 or 6 million in EBITDA. We invest in them that are platform businesses to grow. So that's the sweet spot. It's on there. It gives case studies, a couple of our CEOs that talk about how we work with companies, right, the important part there, and then our own history. So that's pretty informative.
Good stuff. That's fulcrumep.com if you want to learn more. Thank you, Jim Douglas, for being part of the show today.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton, our producer, Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.